Ladies and gentlemen, welcome wrestling fans worldwide to Knoxville and the Great Smoky Mountains for the Ron Fuller Tennessee Studcast.
6 feet 9 inches tall, 265 pounds.
This historic podcast from one of the most respected and successful wrestlers and promoters will follow the footsteps of the largest and oldest wrestling family on the planet.
Listen to what I'm saying. That's right. Bring that camera in here a little bit closer.
Through 93 years and four generations.
The stud has arrived.
Old school or new fan, this unique broadcast will educate and captivate as Ron details decades of professional wrestling's growth with truly unforgettable stories.
I want those people out there at home to hear the stud.
Sit back and enjoy the ride with the Tennessee Stud.
The Tennessee Stud. You will learn that name. You will remember it.
And now,
the stud is here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome in. It's David Summers, and here comes another Studcast with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. This is the story of wrestling in America as told by the stud, whose family started the profession over 100 years ago. So now, let's step back into the ring. Let's step back into time as we get wall-to-wall and tree-top tall with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. Okay, Ron, so the last Studcast started with me asking you what was happening with the Tennessee Stud streaming.com channel. I happen to know the answer, but let's start this one off the same way as the last show. Okay, any changes in the status on that streaming channel?
Oh, yeah, Dave. It certainly is, man. We're definitely up and running now, for one thing. And we're not just streaming. We're streaking, man. And I want to start this Studcast by saying thank you, everyone, for your patience through all this. And when I say all, I'm talking about almost everything you could imagine going wrong because of what our first company that we were doing business with was not capable of doing.
All right, I'm real happy to hear that, Stud. You guys deserve a break, and it sounds like you're finally getting it. I was worried that you might not recover from a start like that with a crash in the first few days. So I assume that everything you're doing now is with a totally different company.
Hey, well, you better believe it, man. So almost everything we're doing now is different than what the last company did.
Mm-hmm.
I feel comfortable saying we are now truly open for business and offering hundreds of hours of old school wrestling from the very beginning for only $4.99 per month. And you can save 15% if you'd like to above that and pay only $49.99 for an entire year. And eventually we're going to be up to 500 hours, Dave, eventually. Right now, we're in the 200 to 300 frame, but we're really adding it substantially every day now.
Okay, I saw your post up on social media last Saturday and wanted to get a look at what was going up, and I was kind of really blown away when I saw it. I couldn't believe how much was already there on the site, even last Sunday when you first advertised the Tennessee Stud streaming channel.com. The channel was open again. So what I was really looking for was the new Studcast that now contain actual TV matches from TV shows recorded 44 years ago.
To me, Dave, that's what I'm most proud of, actually, to have found so many Southeastern Continental USA TV shows and to be able to pick and choose what matches from those TV shows best fit our new Studcast that we are doing specifically on the streaming channel over there. It's been really, really something that I'm really proud of.
Well, when I took a look at the first three new Studcasts on the channel with the original matches and interviews placed right into the Studcast, I realized this is what your Studcast were always intended to be. I think it's really cool.
Right. Well, for more than 7 years, I've only been able to talk about these cards and matches from the old days. And now, since we've found hundreds of TV shows, I can create the perfect Studcast. And by not just telling fans what I was thinking or what was happening, but now I can actually show fans what I was thinking. And there's no comparison between the two of those. These new studcasts, I predict, are going to be the most popular thing on the entire streaming channel. And now I realize that they're so much better than the audio-only version that I've been doing for a long, long time, that I'm no longer going to record studcast in the audio-only form after the date of Wednesday, February 12th. It's about 2 weeks away. We're going to be doing these for 2 more weeks. And then I'm going to start going to the new studcast with all of the bells and whistles that a studcast should have.
All right, that is absolutely huge news, Ron. I got to admit, as soon as you announced the new TennesseeStudStreaming.com channel was up last Sunday, the first thing I wanted to see was what the new studcast looked like with videos in them. And you were right. No comparison between them and the audio-only podcast that we've been doing, and as this one is. All right, so after just watching the last 3 studcasts with videos that are in there, I can honestly see why you didn't want to go backwards.
Well, you know, I've always wanted not only to be able to tell fans the stories and the actions taking place in each one of the studcasts, but to now be able to let them see it for themselves. It's basically changed everything for me. I want to give all fans my best in the new studcast with the actual videos of what I'm talking about, and them is definitely the very best I can do for fans.
I think that the video studcasts are so much better than the audio ones, and obviously a lot more expensive for you to produce and to be able to pull that off. So are you going to be charging any for them?
Oh, absolutely not. You know, I intend to make them free and a part of the entire old school wrestling package for only $4.99 a month. And I want to do this for fans that have been there for years, and I hope they're still going to be there for many more.
All right, so then that makes your $4.99 price an even more phenomenal offer on your part. It was already a great deal, but giving fans the video studcast for free has definitely made your streaming channel the best deal in wrestling, no doubt about it. This is very exciting news. All right, so how about telling us where we're going to be riding today, Stud?
Well, we're going to be riding, man, in the second week of January, 1981, with a classic, that really most unusual card. For the second week in a row, there was going to be an 8-man tag match. There had been not a clear winner yet in any of the 4 major cities from the week before that witnessed basically what I guess I got to call violent 8-man tag matches. Don Curtis, Southeast Commissioner, wanted to end these wars, you know, and that's what he called them. These are just wars, you know, between the 8-man fighting each other. What better way to do that than spend some money? And so he proved his intentions by digging deep into his pockets and bringing back the 8-man tags for a second week in a row. There were 4 more matches still in the major cities, still with the Texas death rules, but this time there was going to have to be a winner in every one of those cities, and the 4-man team that won the most out of the 4 matches was going to get a $30,000 bonus above the normal payoff.
Wow.
Which was $7,500 bonus to each man on the team.
All right, I remember that now, Stud. You talked briefly about this at the end of the last studcast, that $30,000 bonus for winning the winning team back in 1980 was worth like $120,000, I think you said, in today's money. So it's no wonder these eight-man tags had been so violent, and with this kind of money being put up now, I can only imagine what can happen next. Okay, so what else is going to be happening in this studcast?
Well, the rest of the card was a great one too, man. And as we finish it, then I'm very hopeful we can get to the learning tree question today, Dave. It's been a long time since we've had one of those, and hopefully today we'll get the time for it.
It is true. All right, these studcasts have been so full lately with great history, it's been hard to find time for that learning tree question. All right, so why don't we start writing right now into this one and see if we can get a learning tree question in by the end of the show. So let's start with the rest of the card for the second week in January of 1981.
Okay, man, I'm already riding. The opening match was a return match from the week before, with Bob Armstrong facing Dennis Condrey again. All four of their opening matches the week before had ended up in a time limit draw. So we're going to find out how this go-round is going to work. Second match was a future Hall of Fame star, Paul Orndorff. He was going to be wrestling against a familiar Russian star for those southeastern Knoxville fans up there. Alexis Smirnoff is going to be visiting down there in the southeastern Gulf Coast. Ricky Gibson was wrestling Oki Shekina. Then Jimmy Golden, he was in his third week back in wrestling after he had that bad injury 9 months earlier. He's going to be facing the Avenger. Then for the United States Junior Heavyweight Championship, the current champion Jerry Stubbs was given the shadow, his very last shot ever, he said. That's the way he put it, ever, at the championship. Then the last match was that eight-man tag, $30,000 bonus match. Bob and Brad Armstrong, Johnny Valiant, the Tennessee Stud, were wrestling Dennis Condrey, Randy Rose, Mr. Saito, and Ron Bass.
All right, truly a fantastic card. The debut of Paul Orndorff and Alexis Smirnoff, the Shadows' last shot ever at Jerry Stubbs' United States Junior title, and at this point, the extremely dangerous eight-man tag. So how did the TV show on the second week in January of 1981 open up? How did it get going?
Well, before we go there, Dave, I have to say this TV show is going to be a great example of what we talked about a few minutes ago, basically, you know, and about how much better having videos are than just being able to hear the commentators describe the action taking place. So this is going to be the fourth new studcast since the Tennessee Stud Streaming.com channel started. Fans have already subscribed to the channel. Many of them. They're going to be the only ones able to hear the video clips as well as see them. So the last studcast had only the three video clips in it. This one today, Dave, has seven in it. And if you're listening now and then on that audio-only platform, it's going to cost less than $5 for you to take a little trip over there. See for yourself the tremendous difference in what fans are experiencing with someone with the streaming channel is seeing now. It's amazing, the difference. You should consider it, because not only see the video clips in this studcast, but check out the other three new studcasts that are already there as well. And you'll already, for $4.99, you can check out all the hundreds of hours of shows. Check and see exactly what's on there. But I think you got to see for yourself to understand the significance of the difference in the two products.
Yeah, I think you're right, Ron. I hadn't thought of it that way. But I know from experience, no comparison. It's a great way to find out. And for less than $5, why not? All right, so how did the TV show for the 384th Studcast get started?
Well, with a video, and not one of the seven in this studcast, but of one of the four eight-man tag matches. And this one came from Birmingham, Alabama, the week before. It was another of those fight all over the building matches, man, in which it took place in all four of the major cities, where there was no winner declared in any of those matches. And I think that's why Don Curtis was able to come up with so much money, because at this point, we'd already had four of these matches, and nobody had picked up any money from it because they had to stop all the matches. So Charlie Platt and Les Thatcher, they welcomed the fans to the show, and it went straight to the ring for the first match of the day. And last week's show started off with a bang when Jerry Stubbs insisted that he get his former United States Junior Heavyweight Championship belt back from the Shadow, who had beaten him a few days earlier for it. Stubbs ended up getting it back, but not the way he intended to. So the Shadow, for the second week in a row, was again in the first match of this TV show. And Stubbs had regained his belt and was going to defend it one last time ever against the Shadow on the upcoming card the next week. But he had not come to the set yet this time for the Shadows match as he had the week before. I think that's because of what happened to him when he came the last time.
Mm-hmm. All right, so, I mean, that doesn't surprise me in the least. Last week, he ended up getting hit in the head with the belt, got very bloody from that. So how did the Shadow do in this week's match?
Well, basically just as good as the week before. I mean, he was really at the top of his game, and his diving headbutt was a tremendous finish move. And he used it again, obviously. And he may have just lost his belt the week before, but he certainly hadn't lost his popularity with the fans. They were really into the Shadow. So as soon as his match ended and he left the studio, Jerry Stubbs, that's when he came to the set. And he brought his United States Junior Heavyweight Championship belt. And he was not there, however, to talk so much about the Shadow as he was the Shadow's buddy, Jimmy Golden. And that's where we're going to get to our first look at the video clip in this particular studcast. I don't think this is going to require much of an introduction, Dave, except a little reminder of what happened in the last studcast. Because after Stubbs hit Shadow and he stole his belt from him, Jimmy Golden, on his way to the ring to wrestle in the next match, took a little detour and they grabbed Stubbs by the back of the neck and ran him head first into the ring post and took the belt and gave it back to the Shadow.
I remember very well, Stud. I mean, both Stubbs and the Shadow end up bleeding. So Brian, our producer, is going to set that up with the first video clip of today's show. Take it, Brian.
He is the U.S. Junior Heavyweight Champion, and here we're referring to Jerry Stubbs. Well, we have some videotape of a match in which you went against the Shadow.
Yeah, we got some tape where I put out the lights on the Shadow here.
Let's roll the tape, the Shadow against Jerry Stubbs. And, of course, Jerry, this was a non-title bout.
This one here was a title.
A title, excuse me. I'm sorry, a title.
And I defeated him, and I still have the belt, and I'm still champion. Right here you see Norvell Austin, you know, lucky as always. He's always been lucky when he's on top of me. But you'll see, a lot of times I lure the guy in just to where I want him. And when I get him there, it's all over. Right, Charlie Top?
That's your opinion. I agree to a certain extent that you have a talent in, as far as luring your opponents into certain situations.
So what's your action here, Jerry? Let me pose a question. We just saw a man in the ring here a few minutes ago, Jimmy Golden, who certainly has to be considered one of the top junior heavyweights over the past several years, just returning now from an injury, of course. But Jimmy is a man who has stated his ideas that he wants to be United States Junior Heavyweight Champion, and he more or less has indirectly issued a challenge to you.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people that wants to be the U.S. Junior Champion, but who has it? I am Jerry Stubbs, the U.S. Junior Heavyweight Champion. Well, you know, Jimmy Golden, I just got through watching him myself, bless, and he's definitely got himself in shape, but not shape enough for me, because this is one thing I don't give up is the U.S. Junior title. So he's going to have his hands cut out for him if he thinks he's going to take it away from me.
Good suplex by the champion on the Shadow.
Jerry, you've been dueling with Norvell Austin for a number of weeks. We're looking at a match with the Shadow. You're talking about this being Austin. Either way, it doesn't matter. Again, it's a grueling contest with this man. Do you feel that these championship bouts are taking their toll? Do you feel that possibly a man like Golden waiting in the wings would have an advantage after some of these tough defenses you had against Austin or against the Shadow?
Well, you know, I'm not denying that he's tough and will have an advantage over me because he's overweight. Look at the guy. You know, he's been out of work for possibly, what, 6, 8, 10 months? And the guy has put on some weight. He hadn't really gotten in the gym and done a lot of training. So, you know, I don't believe he'd be able to keep up with me.
You don't feel that he's going to be able to trim that weight down and to make the division?
No, I don't think so. I don't think he's got the guts and fortitude to go up and try to lose weight.
Let me ask you what you were going after here in your boot.
I was adjusting my boot. You saw me. I adjusted my boot.
In your hand, I think it would be very obvious.
The sock fell down, so I pulled it up.
That's not what it appears to be. You have some kind of object in your hand.
My sock fell back down again, so I fixed it again. I don't see what you mean I pulled something out of my boot.
Well, I think it's very obvious that if you replace something into your boot after striking the shadow.
My lace came undone there, Les, and what I was doing is sliding my lace back down in my sock.
We were talking about Jimmy Golden, Charlie, and we're going to see Jimmy this moment because now with the shadow relatively
Golden
unconscious.
Just because just like Jimmy Golden is, the backstabber that he is, you'll see him run in the ring, and what does he do? Pull me around and hit me. This is not his match. This is my match. He had no business in here. Right? Am I right or not? He had no business.
He legally did not belong in the ring. I'll go along with that.
I think it was clear to Golden, as well as it is to us on watching this tape, that you did use some kind of an object on Austin.
Well, it might have appeared that I did, but like I said, I was adjusting my sock. You know, it's just like playing basketball. Your socks kind of slide down your leg, and, you know, you have a tendency to pull them back up. That's exactly what I did. I didn't pull anything out of my boot.
Charlie, whatever the case, the road has been rough. Jerry, you've been a great champion, and I can't make enough emphasis on that. The shadow's been tough, and if Golden gets that title match, if he makes that weight cut, he's going to be a tough
one. Well, you know, it takes somebody a long time unless he has the guts enough to do what he's supposed to do, like get in the gym, run a lot, lift weights, trim himself down. I weighed over 235 pounds when I got the belt because I trimmed down to 225. It's not easy, and I don't believe Jimmy Golden's got the guts enough to get in the gym and try to do it.
I know he has a determination to go after that United States Junior Heavyweight Championship, and
well, you know, it says United States Junior Heavyweight. Well, junior, you know, just put the junior aside. I can beat just about any heavyweight if I want to.
Those are the comments of the U.S. Junior Heavyweight Champion Jerry Stubbs. More action to come on Southeastern Wrestling.
Okay, it was a little blurry at times, but not bad for a piece of video shot 44 years ago. My favorite spot in it was that tremendous dropkick Jimmy Golden gave Stubbs. All right, so what's coming up next?
Well, an interview with both Stubbs and the Shadow. They're basically going to be, and they're up at this point. There had been no mention, basically, of the Shadow's last shot ever at Stubbs' belt, but I think in this next video that we're going to be playing, they're going to make it crystal clear exactly, both of them, exactly what that's all about.
All right, here it comes. Our producer, Brian, is going to set that interview up for us now.
One addition to that Monday night card will be the tough Russian grappler, Alexis Smirnov. He'll be meeting former North American heavyweight champion, Paul Orndorff. With me now, the United States Junior Heavyweight Kingpin, Jerry Stubbs. And on Monday night in Boutwell Auditorium, he'll be putting his belt and title on the line against the Shadow. And before we talk to the champion, let's hear these comments from the challenger.
Jerry Stubbs. One more time, Daddy. One more time for the Shadow. A lot at stake this time. I know I got to be ready, which I am. I stay ready. I stay fired up. I'm going for your belt. And my chances are good. You say I ain't got but one chance. I heard you saying last week that you just going to get a Shadow one more chance. But this may be my last chance, but I only need one chance. And I'm going to tell you one thing. I'm going to make that chance good. And when it's all over, you going down. My hand going to be raised in victory.
Jerry, last chance seems to be the key phrase, and the Shadow realizes this could be it for him. He's going to be coming with all his guns loaded.
Well, you know, he had a last chance at Norvell Austin. Then he came up with some kind of deal that I don't know how he slid it on me, but he did. He came up as the Shadow. Well, you know, he's been pretty lucky. But, you know, this belt's on the line this time. And Shadow, boy, it gets rougher and rougher down the line because this is one time you're going to wish you hadn't put your name on the dotted line. Because when I get through with you, it's going to be absolutely, positively, your last chance at my belt. And I did say my belt. And when I leave, it will still be mine. So you might as well just pack your bags and leave. Because you're not leaving with this belt around your waist.
Monday night, Birmingham's Boutwell Auditorium. Jerry Stubbs defends his U.S. Junior title against the Shadow. An eight-man tag, Texas Deathmatch rules. The Stud, the Armstrongs, and Valiant against Bass, Saito, Rose, and Condry. A super lineup. Also on that card, Paul Orndorff, Alexis Smirnov. A great array of stars this Monday night in Birmingham's Boutwell Auditorium.
All right, you were right, Stud. They both acknowledged and made it perfectly clear that this was the last chance for the Shadow. So who is in the next TV segment?
Well, Jimmy Golden. And he came to the set with Charlie and Les, and he basically asked for a couple of minutes to say a few words, comments about the Jerry Stubbs, because Jerry Stubbs had kind of attacked him the segment right before. So they basically said, yeah, okay, that's fine, Jimmy. And then he had some comments, obviously, about Stubbs and what was next, what was going to be coming up next between the two of them.
Okay, so after what Stubbs said, I don't blame Jimmy Golden for wanting a rebuttal. All right, so our buddy Brian is going to play that one.
Now, gentlemen, who at his young career has had a successful career in pro wrestling, and we've seen him before here in the Southeastern wrestling area. He's traveled all over the world. Jimmy Golden, welcome back to the Southeastern wrestling area.
Thanks a lot, Charlie Platt. I'm glad to be here and looking forward to some wrestling action.
When we last saw you, Jimmy, you suffered a back injury. You were wise enough to take the doctor's advice. You stayed out of professional wrestling for several months.
Well, I guess we all get hurt sometime or another, and I had a back injury, but the back is doing fine now. I had to rest and got it in shape, and I guess I'm just about as in good a shape as anybody else in this area today, and I'm looking forward to meeting one feller by the name of Jerry Stubbs. And, you know, Stubbs, I guess I had the best record there ever was held in this country when I left here, and I aim for it to be better than that this time, and I'm going to start with you, brother. I'm going to start with you first. I know you big and strong. You probably pick me up off the floor anytime you want to, but it's know-how, Daddy. It's know-how right here, and I'm going to prove that to you when I get in the ring. Look out, Jerry Stubbs.
You're very flexible, Jimmy, not only in your style of wrestling, but in competition, as you can compete as a heavyweight, and then again, you are right in the weight category for the U.S. Junior title.
That's right. 225 is the U.S. Junior title. Sometimes I go a little over that, up to 230 or so, but I can, like you say, go back and forth. And Jerry Stubbs, I am 225, and I'm going to whip you, sonny.
Something else, we've noted a little change in Jimmy Golden's attitude on this tour in the Southeastern wrestling area.
Well, you know, I'm just me, Charlie, you know. I'm just going to do my thing, brother. I just want to turn me loose in the ring and let him do my thing. A wrestler I am, and I'm here to prove it. Like I said, my record was real good. This time I'm going to make it better.
Comments of Jimmy Golden, who evidently part of his intentions are set on the United States Junior Heavyweight Championship, now held by Jerry Stubbs.
All right, well, those were some choice words for Jerry Stubbs from Jimmy Golden. All right, so what came next?
Well, Jimmy basically was becoming a babyface, and that's a far cry from the way fans felt about him 9 months earlier, and he was a big-time heel when he got hurt.
Yeah.
The next match was the debut of Paul Orndorff, and I'm going to show this entire match next week in the next podcast.
All right, so I don't know how any fan could not see the talent of Paul Orndorff. I can't believe you got him as good as he was during his entire career. By the way, Stud, how did you score an athlete like Paul Orndorff?
Well, it's just a pretty good story. When I started wrestling in Florida in 1970, I'd only been wrestling for about 6 months. I was 22 years old. Paul was a star college football player in Tampa. And, you know, he was a huge wrestling fan. In fact, he hung out there at the old Snake Pit, which was the Florida Wrestling Office. We called it the Snake Pit because that basically was what it was on a lot of occasions. Not a good place to be. So we got to be friends in the first 2 years that I lived in Tampa before I moved to West Palm Beach later on to become basically the promoter down there. So I told him, you know, that I had a dream, man, that someday I wanted to own my own wrestling company. And I remember he told me, he said, Ron, if you ever do, he said, I want to come and wrestle for you. And so it was quite a few years later before that happened, but he never forgot it, obviously. And, and then he called me up out of the clear blue and asked me if there was any chance it was a spot in the territory for him. And I was no fool, Dave. Of course, there was a spot for Paul Orndorff. I mean, he was always going to be a huge star.
Man, and he definitely had the look. All right, so who was Orndorff wrestling in the match that you're going to be showing next week?
Well, he was wrestling another young star, man, that I think is still wrestling today, 44 years later. And I'm talking about Chick Donovan. And what a match these two guys had, man. And we're going to be showing that one, the entire match, in the next podcast.
All right. So,
Chick Donovan was a character.
Yeah, I do remember him. Blonde hair, always wearing a gold outfit, I think it was. And you think he's still wrestling today? That is incredible. All right, so but come to think of it, just a couple of studcasts ago, Mike Jackson out of Birmingham wrestled on that TV show, and you said he was still at it today. That's two wrestlers still at it, past 60 years old. So that's pretty amazing for both of those that we know of. All right, how about the personality profile on this TV show? Who was on that?
Well, it was on two different sets. Charlie Platt was with Bob, Brad, Johnny Valiant, and myself, the Tennessee Stud. And we went out on this profile, and I went out without my mask on, as Ron Fuller. So Les was on the regular set over there with Ron Bass, Mr. Saito, Dennis Condrey, and Randy Rose. We started off first because we had some video to show. Basically how the entire eight-man tag thing that we're really involved in now, actually how it began. And people have not had a chance to see this, and those that obviously can see it will really enjoy it. And, you know, so we started off and we had, you know, to take a look at this video. And I think those that can see it, really going to enjoy it, and those that hear it like it as well.
All right, so it's kind of like setting the foundation for that. Should be a very interesting piece of video. Here we go. Our buddy Brian is going to set that up and play it now.
Ron, this whole thing began with you, where you and Johnny Valiant were signed in a Texas death match against the Mongolian Stomper and Don Carson.
Well, that's right, Les, and John had received a concussion from those same two guys a week earlier, and officials... as well as the doctor, commissioned doctor, would not allow John to participate. I tried to take on both men by myself and was able to hold my own for a short time. And then luckily Bob back here came to help me out. And at the end of this match, we had four guys that were not in scheduled to be in the match, should have been nowhere around the ring, end up jumping in the ring and trying to do away with both myself and Bob Armstrong. And I think the film's pretty much self-explanatory, and that's the reason, as you said, Les, that we asked for an eight-man tag match, and we put up some money ourselves. And that, at this point, Bob's already come down to help me, and had already made a strong comeback, but these guys that were just with the glove and the boot and everything else a little bit too much for Bob, and Bob had been bleeding previously. He'd already been hurt earlier in the night and shouldn't have been out there to begin with, really.
Well, John, of course, the decision not to wrestle with the Tennessee Stud in this particular match was not a decision of your liking.
Well, exactly right, Les Thatcher. I mean, you know, when a doctor talks to me anymore, you know, it used to be years ago when somebody said something, I'll say, well, I'll show you how tough I am. I'll get there. I'll fly to wherever I have to go to wrestle, and I'll get up and I do it, and I did it. But I'll tell you something, as the years go by and the injuries seem to increase, You learn from the different things. You know, just like you make a mistake in the ring, sometimes it causes you to win or lose or whatever. Sometimes you make a mistake to wrestle when you're injured. I mean, these things are postponed. I mean, hey, look at Duran in that fight with Leonard. I mean, sure, it might be controversial, but Duran had the cramps. I mean, hey, I had a tremendous injury in my head, and it was a concussion. The man told me, hey, Valiant, you go in the ring one more time, unless you take a little time off here, you're going to terminate your career. So what's the big choice?
And speaking of terminating careers, that's just what Bob and I are doing at this point. We've ended up with Carson's glove and with the Stomper's boot, and we're about to terminate Don Carson's residence in this particular part of the country, right there. And you won't see Carson
you're
around anymore,
right,
nor the Stomper anymore. And right here is where you see.
Bob, Dennis Condrey, Randy Rose are bouncing in that ring. Of course, earlier on this same card, you and Brad relieved them of the tag team championship belts.
Exactly right, and they were screaming that we stole them, we didn't steal them, we won them. But in that match, they opened me up pretty good, lacerated me, and I lost a lot of blood, but I didn't want to watch the Stud stay out there and take on two by himself. So we came out there, we did the job on the guys, and then here comes Condrey making his promise. He swore that night, he said, I'll get you, it's the last thing I do, and he picked this time to really get me, and he did. He opened me up again profusely. They had some kind of foreign object there. You can see the move they're doing to me right here. They were trying to take me out of it for a while, for sure.
And
they had a field day.
Saito in the back there with his sleeper on me, and Bass standing there just stomping me in the head. And right now they are having just that appeal.
Of course, we mentioned this. This was a foundation for what has been termed by many as an eight-man war. But what it amounts to is $35,000 in prize money going to the winning team, comprised of either you four gentlemen or Rose Condrey, Saito, and Bass. But even adding to that, the fact that eight wrestlers are involved, it is Texas deathmatch rules. And of course, Bob, it's basically anything goes.
That's exactly right. That's the way they wanted to play it when it was 4-on-2. So why not get 4-on-4 and let the best team win? You know, I don't like to take a beating like this from anybody, anytime, anywhere. And we're going to settle it in a Texas deathmatch, which I think is the best way, where falls do not count. You go till somebody's laying flat on his back and can't answer a 10 count. You can go all night if you want to. And I intend to pay back, because every time I look in the mirror, I see this scar right down my forehead, and I remember Condrey, Rose, Saito, and Bass all had a hand in it. Now it's 4 against 4. Let's see how they like it when it's even Steven instead of 4-on-2.
But I want to know something right now. I want to say this to my teammates here. I want everybody to stay out of my way, man. I want everybody to stay out of my way, because I want to be the lead dog. I want to be the man to start that match. I want to be the man to finish that match. I want to be the man during that match. I want to be your man, man. I want to be your man. I want to be everybody's man, but I'll tell you, I'm my man. That's the point I wanted to
say. $30,000, Ron, probably the largest individual purse I know in 20 years of being around professional wrestling, and certainly not only the four you battling for, but four equally as tough professional athletes.
Well, that's right. I appreciate John's attitude there, and I certainly want to see everybody in this match, all four of us, get our opportunity to take care of some business. $30,000 is a whole lot of money, there's no doubt about it, and $5,000 of it, each of our own money we have put up, and those guys have put up. Curtis added $10,000 to it. Somebody, Les Thatcher, is going to win $7,500 each, one of these teams, and we're looking forward to it. Texas Death Match, eight of us, $30,000.
An eight-man Texas Death Match, $30,000 going to the winning combination. It's certainly going to be an eight-man war. That has been our personality profile for today. We hope you've enjoyed it.
All right, no doubt about it. That was excellent for those who could see it. We had seen a little of the match with Bob and the Tennessee Stud in the first of the new Studcast. But the big brawl after Stomper and Carson left the ring for the last time was all new. All right, so Bob had some very insightful thoughts, but Johnny Valiant, to me, was just kind of strange. But the $30,000 received a lot of attention.
Yeah, I mean, that piece of video there is pretty cool. And so Valiant was, strange is a good way of putting it. He was an he was an all New Yorker. I mean, there was no other way to put it, Dave. And I had a hard time, and he was having a very difficult time blending in with this crew of Southern boys. And, Who wouldn't have paid attention to that kind of money, though? So that's, you agree that $30,000 got everybody's attention, not just the fans, but certainly the eight guys that were involved and maybe getting their hands on it. So Les took it from there. And, we had finished our say over there, and you got a good feel for what the other four wrestlers were all about in this next upcoming video.
All right, so I think this is the first time we will have heard from all four of these wrestlers, and Brian is going to set that one up for us.
This Monday night, Birmingham's Boutwell Auditorium, that card capped off by an eight-man tag team match, Texas Deathmatch Rules, $30,000 in prize money going to the winning team, and it will be the Tennessee Stud, Johnny Valiant, Bob and Brad Armstrong against the four gentlemen surrounding me here, Ron Bass, Randy Rose, Mr. Saito, and Dennis Condrey. And Ron, for this kind of prize money, everyone is going to be in there gunning to win.
Texas Death Match. Les Thatcher, as we've always said down in Texas, everywhere else is just a suburb of Texas, and that's exactly what's happening. Everywhere you look, you see people thinking Texas. Well, that's fine, because it's a Texas Death Match now. Falls don't count. There's no disqualification. Anything that any individual wants to do, we can do.
And then you add all of that together and put $7,500 to the winner. Each person gets $7,500. You better believe that this Texan and all his friends right here are going to be in there kicking, gouging, scratching, whatever we got to do to get that money, baby.
Randy, certainly the biggest prize money for one match I've ever seen.
That's right, $30,000 split between the four big Texans. That's right. Our man here just made us an honorary Texan. All of us. Even our Japanese friend here, he made him an honorary Texan so we can go into Texas death match and come out victorious and rich.
Mr. Saito, a lot of American dollars at stake Monday night.
Oh, Mr. Saito, a lot of American dollars. I love American dollars. I love Texas death match. I love a lot. I love tough. I love mean Japanese. So that's your Nihon no Mirasa. How do you have to understand, sir?
Would you like to translate that?
All I'm going to say is we're going to fly the governor of Texas down here, and he's going to be at ringside watching a Texas death match, and he's going to see one of the native sons, all of us, come out victorious.
We're going to get to hurt people in this match. Anything goes, baby.
Monday night,
and you're
going to
get it for $7,500 bananas.
Okay, I don't think anybody would want to tangle with that groove stud, and that $30,000 bonus prize to the winners was definitely going to produce some interesting nights and fights. So, who was in the next TV match?
Well, it's that group that you said you wouldn't want to tangle with. It was an 8-man tag on TV. And all four of those bad boys, I basically call them Ron Bass, Mr. Saito, Dennis Condrey, and Randy Rose, they made a real statement about what was going to happen next week. All four of their opponents were carried from the ring, and as a matter of fact, in that tag match, none of them could walk away. And the show was about to end, and all four of us had more, basically one more short interview.
All right, and then here it comes right now.
One addition to that Monday night card in Bowel Auditorium will be that of Russian wrestler Alexis Smirnov, as he'll be facing the former North American champion Paul Orndorff. Both these gentlemen will be here in Birmingham for the very first time. But the highlight of that card, the main event, the match they're all talking about, an 8-man tag team event, Texas death match rules, and it is $30,000 to the winning team, John Vane.
Yeah, can you imagine yourself in a Texas death match for 1 minute? Can you visualize yourself and your wildest of dreams in the ring in there, man, with the likes of a guy like a Saito? Big chop, and my friend is a deck of cards.
Bob, it looks like Rose Conner will be gunning for the Armstrongs in that one Monday night.
Well, they usually are. They're really upset because we won those Southeastern titles, and they've tried many tricks. They've opened me up good. Everybody in Birmingham saw that. They used some kind of foreign object. Well, let me tell you this, Les. In a Texas death match, foreign objects become legal. And two can play at that game. What's good for the goose is good for the gander, brother. Yeah. And I'm going to get your goose in Birmingham Monday night. You can count on it.
Let me have his gander then.
The action's going to be fast, Ron.
What the hell is a gander?
Well, I'll say this. $30,000 is a lot of money, as much as I've ever competed for in the wrestling sport. And I know that $7,500 to each of us means a whole lot. I know it means a whole lot to you guys. This is a Texas death match. Anything goes. Falls don't count. It goes on until somebody cannot get to their feet. And all four of us in pretty darn good shape. We're going to be standing when it's over come Monday night. And one of you guys, or maybe several of you guys, are going to be laying. And we're looking forward to the 30 grand.
This Monday night, bell time, 8 p.m., Birmingham's Boutwell Auditorium.
Peter.
All right, this has been a tremendous TV show. I can't believe we watched so much real footage from 44 years ago, Stud.
Well, hang on, Dave, because we're not done yet, man. We didn't find this last piece of video until this week. We were looking through things, and we discovered this piece that we didn't even see, had not seen previously. So on the last studcast last week, right after the last match, which basically that was with Bob and Brad against big old Ron Bass and Oki Shekina, and it turned into a brawl, and all eight of us end up in the ring before that was over. And when the bell was finally rang, Charlie and Emma was closing out the show, and all of a sudden Ron Bass comes back to the set, and let's take a look at that. That's going to work out.
Okay. Can't believe there's more, but Brian is going to load it up for us to close this TV out and take it, Brian?
Of course, we want to talk about 1981 and a lot of talk.
There's nothing scheduled. There's nothing scheduled. It's, there they are again, issuing challenges. And I don't know. Wait. Wait a minute. It's not scheduled, but we've got wrestlers all over that ring.
Let's go back to the ring.
The Armstrongs, the Stud, Bass, Condry, Rose, Saito, Valiant moving into the ring. Each. We've got wild people in this ring here as we talk about it again.
Our time is about gone. I'm running very short of time. We'll stay with this as long as we can. But we've got all 8 men in the ring again.
All right, this is an absolutely crazy finish to any TV show, Stud. I can't wait to get home and jump on that streaming channel. So I'm sure everybody has enjoyed this, but those watching in the streaming channel are going to have a really fantastic time with this episode. All right, so what was the result of the matches in that second week of January? Take us back to 1981.
Well, again, the opening match was Bob Armstrong against Dennis Condry, and that match had ended, all of them, four of them in the four major cities, all in 15-minute time limits the week before. So this time, it ended up with Dennis Condry. After about 10 minutes, he'd had enough, and he just went back to the dressing room. That was the end of it. He didn't care to whether Bob got his hand raised or not. And actually, that happened in all four of the cities. He walked his way back to the dressing room and avoided, I guess, getting his rear end beat. Robert Gibson, he was in his second week in the Southeastern Territory, and he beat Oki Shekina. Paul Orndorff, who was in his first week in the territory, got a victory every night that week over Alexis Smirnoff. Jimmy Golden also got a win every night over a guy called the Avenger. And then the Shadow's last shot at Jerry Stubbs' United States Junior Heavyweight belt did not bring him a victory, but Jimmy Golden was right there at ringside when Stubbs won, and he stepped basically into the Shadow's spot and him and Stubbs got into a little altercation there in the ring, and Jimmy was going to get his first shot at that championship belt of Jerry Stubbs the next week. The 8-man war that had taken over everything did not come without a huge surprise, though. The $30,000 bonus that went to the team that won the most Texas death matches that week, that prize went to Ron Bass, Mr. Saito, Dennis Condry, and Randy Rose. But they had to end up splitting the money, man, five ways, because Johnny Valiant turned on the Tennessee Stud during the course of these events. And the five of them left the Stud and Bob and Brad all laying, the heat from that finish, I got to say, was absolutely tremendous. Nobody expected Valiant to do what he did.
Wow, that had to have been a great night for the company, if not for the fans, with Johnny Valiant, who I already said I thought was a little strange, turning on the Stud and the Armstrongs. All right, it had to be a real shock for every fan who was there. So how about the attendances for those surprising nights in the second week of January 1981?
Well, gosh, they were very, very big. I mean, fans love these 8-man tags. And Birmingham sold out 6,000. Actually, it didn't hold many more than that. It had 6,000. In Mobile, we were back in Expo Hall. We weren't in the big arena this time. But it actually had 6,100. And sell out there, too. Birmingham went up 400 fans from the week before, 4,500 to 5,000. And Dothan was up 200 fans to 5,100. So basically, we did over 21,000 fans in four nights.
Okay, so this is, I mean, to me, this has been all kinds of information and a shocking night for fans, especially those that were there live. I've got some good news, Stud, finally, on this episode, here we go, because we have enough time for a learning tree question this week. And this one comes from Michael Boker. I hope I said his name right. He did not tell us what city or country he lives in, but he asked, were regional champs decided by promoter owners based on money drawn or popularity, or were they decided by the main NWA office?
That's a very interesting question, Mr. Boker, and I can understand you asking that. Actually, I like it because it gives me an excellent opportunity to educate my audience and as well as answer your question at the same time. The National Wrestling Alliance basically was nothing more than an organization of promoter owners from all over the world that recognized their own world champion and made that champion available to all of the members in that organization. So you, if you came, became a member, if you were lucky enough to be voted in by the other, you got voted in by the other members. That's how you got in there. And so you had to have some friends and you had to be running a good company because they didn't want to, anything that wasn't big time, they weren't really interested in. So the NWA itself had no control over what they did in your territory, basically, unless you did something crazy that affected their standards or something that had to do with making a mistake with their champion. You usually were pretty well set there, and you made your own decision about who you hired and what you wanted to, who you wanted to make champion out of in your own territory. Nobody told you how to do that. And so your thoughts, Mr. Boker, about regional champs being decided by promoter owners, basically that was exactly right. And many times it was also based upon the money they drew and their popularity. But that decision about who was the right guy or guys, if you were talking about tag teams, went far beyond that. It was one of the very biggest decisions you were going to make as a promoter owner. I always ask myself, is this wrestler one of the best workers in the business? Is he honest? What kind of person is he? When nobody's around, what kind of person is he? Does he look like a champion? Does he dress like one? Does he have class, which is really important? Is he a level-headed guy and willing to work with anybody you want? And I guess the last question I always ask myself, is he capable of having great matches night after night? So thanks for your question, sir, and I really hope to hear from you again. It was a great question. Thank you very much.
And another great answer, Stud. All right, so where are we going to be riding as we get ready for next week's show?
Well, we're also going to be entering the middle of January 1981. There was so much happening in the territory at this point, man. So many new guys coming in. So many different angles. So we're going to have three championship matches. They're going to be on the next studcast. And then we're going to Johnny Valiant. Had just shown basically his true colors and wanted a shot in my Southeastern Championship belt basically since the day he arrived. And he was finally going to say that on the next studcast. He's going to come out and tell what he's all about, what Johnny Valiant was all about. Condrey and Rose are going to be back after the Southeastern tag belts again. Someone's going to get hurt in that match. And Jimmy Golden, who had quickly become a fan favorite, on his return to the sport, going to get his shot at the United States Junior Heavyweight Championship belt to Jerry Stubbs. Four more matches are on that card besides those three championships, and one of which is another handicap match. It's going to have both of the Oates brothers, Ted and Jerry, against Mr. Saito. And then TV matches are going to be shown on the streaming channel. What we're going to see on the streaming channel, there's going to be Paul Orndorff against Chick Donovan, an entire match. We're going to see a match with an injury one of the Southeastern tag champions. And we're going to see Ron Bass on there in one of his first matches on the streaming channel. So it's going to be another big one.
Hey, no doubt about it. It sounds like another big one for sure. All right, any final comments today, Ron?
Just a big thank you, man, to all the new fans that are already enjoying the TennesseeStudStreaming.com channel. And please tell your friends and neighbors about us. Take care of yourselves and others, and may God bless us all.
For Ron Fuller in the Great Smoky Mountains, I'm David Summers saying thank you for listening. Find me on Facebook at facebook.com/dsummers955 and on Twitter, X, Dave_Doohan. On Instagram, it's instagram.com/davidsummersproductions. And hit me up anytime at davidsummersproductions@gmail.com. This studcast is a David Summers production. For Tennessee Stud, LLC. Thanks for joining us today for this historic studcast. The true story continues next week. So fool Nelson your friends and point them in our direction for another ride with the Tennessee Stud.
One, two, three.
This is David Summers saying so long from the Great Smoky Mountains.